I become my ego. As our education continues, we hear about the spirit or the spiritual part of ourselves from church and other sources, but we are taught to identify with our ego. We are taught to identify with fear, guilt, scarcity, and shame. Since we learn from experience, and most of our experiences are directed towards the ego, this is the part of ourselves with which we identify. This ego is who we think we are. Even in many churches, we are denied direct experience with God or Spirit. We are told what to believe and how to feel. Visions, mystical experiences, and inner guidance are somehow reserved for the religious elite. To claim these experiences for ourselves, we are told, is to be overly proud and presumptuous. Living this way without much of a spiritual identity is what the poet Thoreau called quiet desperation. We know there is something more, we just do not know what it is. Because we are continually looking outside for fulfillment, we are ripe for embracing anyone or anything that can help us feel more whole or complete. This yearning for wholeness, coupled with the sense that completion can only be found outside of the self, creates the fertile ground for addictions. We become more and more identified with our little shuttlecraft, that part of ourselves that is exploring outside, our ego. The world around us helps to support this belief. Advertising is a great example. The whole gist of advertising is to make us feel deficient and tell us that we will feel better and more complete if we buy this or that product. Religious views sometimes support this belief. We are sinners, and that is it. We cannot do anything on our own. There is something wrong with us. All of these we's refer to our ego. In actuality, it is only part of who we are. By the time we get to adolescence, however, we are so identified with our ego consciousness that it is difficult to perceive ourselves any other way. Addictions, a dead end in our search for wholeness. By this time, it is probably easy to see why we begin to seek outside of ourselves for a sense of oneness or security. A speaker by the name of Bob E. from California related there were two primary messages he received during childhood. Now, nobody necessarily said these words, but the messages were, "There is something wrong with me, and I am not enough." What a profound way of describing the ego. Most of us, whether we heard the words verbally or not, are carrying around those messages to some degree. These painful sensations of not being enough or having something wrong with us combine with a sense of incompleteness to create a powerful longing for peace and wholeness. We naturally begin to start looking for someone or something to heal our woundedness and relieve our pain. We realize we cannot look inside ourselves for the answers because we have already decided something is wrong with me and I am not enough. So we turn our focus outside of ourselves, and guess what is out there? It is a smorgasbord. It is like Alice in Wonderland. Eat me, drink me, buy me, and I will make you whole and complete. That is the promise of practically everything out there. The culture of consumerism and advertising is built on the idea of creating a need or a feeling of inadequacy. Once the need is created, then someone develops a way of filling that need. Get hair, lose hair, change the color of your hair, straighten it, make it curly, condition it, bleach it, and so on. You have probably heard the word codependency before. Without going into a great deal of detail, codependency is the root of all addictions. Codependency is basically seeking outside of ourselves what we can only really find inside. The trap is if we are looking for wholeness, fullness, completion, and God outside of ourselves, we will never find it. Remember that story of creation we spoke of earlier? Looking for something in the wrong place never works. You probably recall that wonderful song title, Looking for Love in All the Wrong Places. Even knowing in your mind that God is inside of you does not keep you from continuing to look outside. Your old learning can be so ingrained and powerful that it defies logic and experience. Surrender to win. The transformation from the ego-restricted self to spirit-led consciousness can be called many things, such as letting go or acceptance, but it is usually referred to as surrender. Surrender is the process of waking up. Surrender is the true meaning of being born again. Surrender opens us up to consciously embracing our natural state, which is having our soul, our spiritual energy, in charge of our lives. The process can be triggered by many things, but surrender is probably most signified by willingness or a desire to change. This moment of willingness is sometimes expressed as being sick and tired of being sick and tired. We come to the realization that everything we have been trying to do with the power of our ego is just not working. At this moment, we might not even be consciously aware of our spiritual nature. In fact, we are probably not. We just reach a point where we need to say, "Help me, I can't do it anymore." This is the moment when the structure of the ego collapses. For a brief instant, the ego implodes and the soul shines through. We get a glimpse of who we are beyond all the glitter and the garbage, beyond all the roles and all the things we think we are or we think we ought to be. We get a sense of unconditional love. We get a taste of God within, a personal presence inside of us. At the same time, we can also know God outside of ourselves as a transcendent mystery. The I of me is no longer a stuck, helpless, addicted, self-centered little thing. In surrender, we go beyond all of that, and we realize what it is like to sense the presence of God deeply within us. We might not have words for all of this, but that does not matter. The experience is not an intellectual one. It is an inner experience of God and our soul, our true nature. Although the experience might only last for a second or so, it can remain part of our awareness forever. Many of us did not even know surrender happened when it happened. But when we awake, we realize we were never alone. Even if we could not feel it, Spirit was there to love and to guide. Grace is forever happening here, even when we do not know it or feel it. The process of letting go is frightening. It is scary. Many of us continue to hold on to addictions and attachments because we do not know who or what we are surrendering into. We do not know what kind of God is going to be waiting for us on the other side of our surrender. The God we meet is nothing like the one we had learned about and feared. The God we encounter on the other side of surrender is unconditional love, strength, wisdom, and life. We do not meet a person, we meet love itself. This moment of surrender is when the ego blinks out of existence, sometimes just for a split second. In that instance, the full light of our soul comes shining through. We are conscious of our connection with God, the source of unconditional love. The fact that we cannot consciously make this happen as much as we might desire it says that this moment of surrender is grace. It is gift, but one that is freely given always. We only need to be open to receiving it. We can describe it in many ways: the realization of God's unconditional love, the deep yet unconscious release of old beliefs, the vision to see ourselves as we really are. We see ourselves as miraculous shining lights, children of God, and the light of the love of God here on planet Earth. By intimating that surrender is not something we can consciously control, we do not mean to say our inside work is trite or meaningless. We believe our internal disposition, conscious or unconscious, is essential. It is from our heartfelt desire to change or transform that surrender springs, because this is a desire of the soul to come to the forefront. Even though surrender is sometimes described as ego death, surrender is not about destroying the ego, which is what the ego thinks, but a matter of reestablishing our original identity, where the power of spirit and our identification with spirit creates a deep knowing of who we really are. Waking up is hard to do. After a moment of surrender, we find the ego is tremendously resilient and comes back to life almost immediately. It begins its quest for getting back on top with a vengeance. This is a natural response. We need to recognize that this reaction of the ego emanates from its sense of isolation and aloneness. We do not need to respond in kind. Reacting to the ego with anger or fear simply produces more anger and fear. Sometimes we can choose to perceive our ego as a three-year-old, which it is in many ways. We might like to think our ego has matured a little over the years, but most of the time it's still three. So let us suppose that your inner three-year-old is acting up. It is frightened or angry, and it wants to get its own way. That is okay. It is just being a typical three-year-old. We do not have to get angry or fearful at it. We do not have to figure it out either. That is like trying to figure out a three-year-old who does not want to talk to you. All we have to do is love it, even in its obnoxious state of behavior, and know that our soul, connected with God, is in charge. For example, let us say we are crossing the street and our real three-year-old is having a fit because he wants to stay where he is, or because he is afraid of all the noise and the cars. We do not have to get mad and just leave him there. We do not have to pound him into submission either. We pick him up and we take him across the street. Marion Williamson says, when her ego acts up or gives her a piece of fearful information, she just gently pats it on the head and says, "Thank you for sharing," and then prayerfully listens to her soul for direction. Although grace presents itself in many ways, there are dramatic moments of surrender and grace. Perhaps the most celebrated one is Paul on the road to Damascus, when he was thrown from his horse by a great light and heard the words of the risen Christ, "Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me?" From that moment, Saul, or Paul as he is now known, expressed himself in a very different way. Before his awakening, he was a staunch persecutor of the Christians. Now he was a Christian himself. He was so fired up on the truth of the Christ that he spent the rest of his life spreading the word. Bill Wilson, the co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, was lying in a hospital bed undergoing his umpteenth detox treatment when he cried out in despair and total frustration, "If there be a God, let him show himself." Wilson reports, "Suddenly my room blazed with an indescribably white light. I was seized with an ecstasy beyond description. Every joy I had known was pale by comparison. I became acutely conscious of a presence which seemed like a veritable sea of living spirit. I lay on the shores of a new world. For many, however, there is no drama. The answer to the prayer of the heart comes slowly and gradually, sometimes without our conscious knowing. For some, it is comparable to taking a pain reliever for a headache. Once we take it, we usually go about our business, and then perhaps an hour or so later, we recognize that the medication has worked. We do not have a headache anymore. Surrender is sometimes like that. We earnestly and deeply pray for peace and deliverance, then go about our lives as we must. Later on, in a moment of awareness, we realize we are responding to life differently than before. We might realize we are much more at peace, less troubled, and we realize that the prayer of surrender worked. We recognize surrender has happened, even if we were not conscious of it. We become aware we are in the gentle hands of spirit rather than the fearful, harsh, and sometimes cruel hands of the ego. The grace and the moment of grace is marvelously described by Marion Woodman when she expressed, "The God comes through the wound. God comes through the wound." That is beautiful. Before surrender, many of us have taken the road of addiction and attachment. It is not something we did on purpose, but it is the only road possible when we are looking for God and peace and truth outside of ourselves. When we are trapped in our limited ego consciousness, we live in the illusion that whatever it is we seek can be found outside of ourselves. We might even know we are seeking God, but our consciousness has become convinced that God cannot be in here, inside of me. It must be out there someplace. Strangely enough, it is addictions that lead us to this place of grace. We might spend years looking outside of ourselves for God, for peace, for self-esteem. Finally, we reach that space when the ego can no longer sustain the illusion that it is in charge and can take care of everything, including things such as inner peace. When the illusion is pierced, the ego collapses, and the Spirit of God, your spirit, comes shining through. Hitting bottom with addictions is a wake-up call and sometimes a trumpet blast, reminding us that we are much more than our egos. Recovery from addictions can be the way we find our way home. The gift of grace is that through our woundedness comes the light of the world. Through our woundedness comes the power and the presence of wholeness, love, goodness, and peace. Once we experience that presence of God, nothing will ever be the same. We open to spirit that was there all along, although we could not see it. We begin to realize spirit is who we are. There are so many things that can wake us up. It could be a death in a family, an illness, a divorce, losing a job, or hitting bottom in an addiction. Sometimes asking that age-old question, "Is that all there is?" can be the opening to surrender and spiritual awakening. None of us can tell or predict what the event or circumstance will be for us or for anyone else. Along with the event or situation, there has to be a certain internal disposition or readiness. This is so subtle and beyond our conscious control that it defies description. But willingness, conscious or unconscious, is an essential part of the process of waking up. We have all probably had the experience of reading a book or watching a movie more than once and noticing that a certain phrase or sentence or scene powerfully grabs us. And we wonder to ourselves why it did not affect us before. We might not even have remembered it the last time around. Or if we did remember it, it never had much meaning to us. Now, however, it is ripe with meaning. What is the difference between the first time you came across that sentence or scene and now? The difference is that you now have some life experience that makes that part of a book or movie meaningful to you. You have a piece of life experience you did not have before. Obviously, the book or the movie has not changed. You have. Waking up or becoming aware has a similar set of qualities. We have become open or ready for a new way of perceiving ourselves and the world. In the Eastern traditions, it is believed that when a person is ready, the slightest touch of even a drop of rain can produce enlightenment. But if the person is not ready, a tidal wave can knock you over without any transformational effect at all. However it happens, we begin to wake up to our soul. We begin to wake up to the realization of God within. For most of us, it is not usually a sudden, dramatic, road to Damascus kind of experience. It is usually pretty gradual. Grace can come subtly and gently, as well as dramatically. However it shows itself, it reveals to us the secret of what we have been trying to reach all along. The secret is that we are not this little self-centered ego that is running around getting attached to anything it can. No, we are so much more than that. We are a part of God. We are a reflection of the creative spirit. We are whole. We are perfect. As we balance and become more and more identified with our spiritual nature, and the ego returns to its designated place, we are again led by spirit, but now in a conscious way.